Hi, I'm Richie Mackay.
And I'm Daley Bolt, and you are listening to the Wrong Bias Podcast.
And on show 52 of the Wrong Bias Podcast, we are joined by our good friend, Jason Parkinson. And it's a little bit of a different podcast as we tackle a very emotive subject, men's mental health. We also have a review of the West Lothian Scottish International Open. As always, thanks to our sponsors, Lean to Succeed, and to Toprink Bowls, our new competition sponsor. And you can visit their website at www.toprinkbowls.com. Thanks for your support, and we hope you enjoy the show. Hey man, here we go, show number 52 of the old podcast. The last few weeks, if anybody's been living on Mars, I've missed quite a lot of live streaming that we've been doing up and down the country. Started in September to November, 7 venues, 13 events, 180 hours of balls, mate, and 2,500 miles.
4,600 quid's worth of grain shield stamps.
That 2,500 of miles was probably 2,000 of coming back from west of Scotland. The bloody roads were shut left, right in the centre, man. Horrific drive home.
I fell for you, mate, when you told us the next day and both the main routes coming back from Scotland were closed.
To end up on a rally track with the weather. The road just went, you were driving. Where's the road gone? Bloody hell, hit the brake. But it all went well. Many thanks to the PBA and all the clubs that accommodated us and put us up and what have you. Viewing figures were tremendous. I mean, there was one of the event we hit 960, which in fact, we actually hit about 980. We were very close to hitting 1,000, which would have been bollocks out in the row of the green, mate. However, man, where's this come from? From our 23 when we first started it. Where was the first? Usworth, wasn't it?
Usworth, aye.
Usworth with Jackson McKenna and Brian Porter, 23 of us sitting now with a bloody table out on the side of the green
on a cold May night.
We'll speak about the West Lothian event because we've got a early Secret Santa on this podcast. Congratulations to Dee Hogan and Rachel Sinclair, Scotland, who won the Hong Kong Classic Pairs. I still see it, and you're probably going to come back and counteract what I'm going to say here, but I've seen better looking council greens, mate. I watched the stream and I've gone, they're playing on a football pitch.
I read today, I think, and Dunwoody actually updated saying the rink looked really tricky, but the greens themselves, mate, like I say, they're not grass, they're a little leaf, so they look like a bit of a ploughed field at times. But I remember when I first walked in, the first time I'd seen it, I was like, these are going to be heavy as lead, these things, because they look like a December outdoor green in the UK that hadn't been cut until the start of the season. And I went on, I launched my first ball expecting it to head halfway up the green, and I stuttered the backboard. You can hit a few divots in that now and again, and it'll send your ball off on a different track. And Dave Kingdon, if he ever listens to this, will be crying as I talk about this, because I got an outrageous wick. You get a back toucher on the last end to win the singles. It was an absolute banger. I was laughing made off because I thought, you've got no chance of getting that.
It's a poor lad just getting over it. Now it's traumatised again. Just a little nice reminder for everybody. We are covering the IBC, the IBC, whatever it's called, under-25s championships at East Kilbride. I have had it confirmed, and we are covering the quarterfinals, semi-finals and the finals. That's a Thursday and the Friday, December 7th and 8th. So I don't know whether they know what they've let themselves in for, like, but hey-ho. If they come over and want to do a bit of commentary, they're off. They're off. We'll do nothing professional here. They're off.
So on our 52nd show, I believe you said, Mr. Mackay, we had to work that one out. Our 52nd show and the 64th appearance for Mr. Jason Parkinson. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thought it would be very nice to have you on the show again. I mean, we've missed you, but since the last podcast you were on, which is...
Well, I just like to pop on every now and again. One, just to raise your figures, and two, obviously, just add a bit of glamour, really.
Add a bit of glamour, yeah, absolutely.
He's a bit happier than he was last Sunday, mate. That's all I'm saying. He had his grumpy face on last Sunday, red jacket on, hood up, didn't want to be here.
I was so cold. Went outside for a warmer.
I know.
Well, I take me hat off to both of you. You've both covered a lot of miles this season. We've obviously got you on the show for a key thing. I think it's quite apt for this month.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously mental health time at the moment. Nationally, it's quite good, and it's quite key. I think it's the biggest killer for men, especially under 50 years of age. I mean, that's the first stat that should really ring alarm bells, really. I get it from a couple of sides, having been there myself, been in that black hole, as people call it. 2 years ago this week, which this is always a very difficult week for me, so it's quite apt about doing the show. Friday coming is 2 years today. My best mate took his own life as well. So that is, yeah, it's very difficult, very, very difficult. Having spoken to him, you know, maybe I think the police said probably 3 or 4 minutes before he took his own life, I think the phone call ended. So that's always going to be a kind of skeleton, if you want to call it a skeleton. I'm very lucky to work for the railway. We have lots of specialist companies, lots of free companies that we're able to kind of reach out to. There's always that what if, why, what if I'd done this, what if I'd said that, what if I'd tried this. That's still always there in my head. And it's silly, really. And it just shows you how things do play in your mind, because I know deep down inside, no matter what I'd have said, let's say, and I've done it before with my mate Paul, who I'm talking about. I mean, Grant and I, we'd seen Paul. I mean, I've known him many, many years through the airlines. We've lived in the Middle East together, which as a gay person, it's not the best place to live. But I'd always been there to kind of like bouncing back up, if you wish, you know, all that roller coaster, roller coaster, roller coaster. And unfortunately, that roller coaster, as all do, came to an end. And I know deep down inside that, you know, had I have changed his mind, should we say, that evening, there'd have been another evening, but it's still not that phone call will haunt me forever, I think. It's still not, I don't know, it's silly. Maybe a tad selfish, but all I want to say to people is just talk. You know, the other side of things, which is prominent, especially at the moment coming towards Christmas, my job as an operations manager in the railway. I mean, Grant and I have both been in work today as someone's put themselves in front of a train. I was in work yesterday as someone put themselves in front of a train. The day before, someone put themselves in front of a train. It's that, we call it the lemming season on the railway, where the pressures of Christmas, I can't support my family, the kids, I'm going to let my kids down, and all three of them, men. You know, I don't know what it is with the women, whether they just get together, you know, have a few drinks, have that chat. Is it a macho thing? Is it that manly thing? I can't show a soft side. But, you know, 97.5% of people putting themselves in front of a train, you know, or taking their own life, is normally a man. And that's where we need to kind of like just accept, you know, that people are there to talk. And that, you know, I think for us as bowlers, I mean, look at Craig Bowler's story. I think that's always one that comes to my mind straight away, purely inspirational. And he talks about it. You know, he does, maybe not at the time, obviously, which is why he did what he did. But, you know, he said that was, and this is what I find powerful, that was the best thing that ever happened to him, because he changed the person he was and has now become. To me, that is the most powerful thing. But let's not get it to that point. Let's get to being able to talk to somebody that can also make that change.
It's very apt within the sport as well. I mean, you know, there's numerous times I use Facebook very, you know, sparsely as far as doing anything from a personal point of view to put much on there. I'll you know, it's great for the podcast and things, but you see people's timeline. I've got about 2,700 people, and it's amazing how many times you see just these odd pop-ups come up from people who are actually, it's a, you know, a potential shout for help, because they'll put a post on, which is very, you sit back and go, whoa, hang on a second. It's, you know, quite strong words from some people, and you know, they'll openly use social media to try and make people aware of how they're feeling and what they potentially feel like doing, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a one of those scenarios, and I think it's more and more prevalent now, because the governing bodies are making sure that there is a safeguarding officer in every single club, which exactly there should be, because there should be somebody and a representative, and it's easy for clubs to, you know, turn the blind eye. And what I hope doesn't happen is that they just look at something and decide to put somebody in that position just because they've been told to. I think it's really important that they attend the safeguarding workshops that are available and go on to a few, you know, maybe safeguarding courses to just to actually understand what it takes to actually go and have that private conversation with somebody and know what the procedure is from that point onwards, that they're not going to go to a committee and then tell everybody what the scenario is. The safeguarding officer is there to be completely impartial and basically make sure that anything is discussed with the right people, and they do the best to try and help that person, whatever the scenario might be. And it mightn't be a case of mental health. It might be a case of somebody's being bullied, or it might be a case of somebody's, you know, thinking that there's banter within a club, but somebody's taken it really personally, or, you know, a comment's gone down the wrong way. So I think it is apt, and, you know, it's easy, like I say, it's easy to turn a blind eye. And I know for a fact that people just are quite blasé about it. And it's not because they don't care. I think they just sometimes don't want the responsibility of actually thinking, frankly, I might need to do something here. I might need to step in, or I might need to have that chat with somebody. So I think there's a bit of they're a bit frightened more than anything else. I've seen loads of times from yourself, you know, some of the sad updates that, you know, the rigors and awful things that you have to go through at work, and it must be horrific to have to go through that type of thing. And yeah, I think it's a really good topic to talk about, especially this month when it's highlighted nationally as well.
Yeah, I think this shows you exactly where the sad state of the sport in one way, but also the amount of work that needs to be done. I mean, unfortunately for bowls, obviously, because we don't make a living out of bowls anywhere really in the world. I know they do slightly better Southern Hemisphere, but, you know, the people that's needed, I mean, as in the volunteers that's needed, 80% of the time is people that are not working through their own choice or retired. Unfortunately, not all the time that makes them the right people. The right people sometimes that need to be there either don't want to be involved or haven't got the time to be involved. Now, that's been the case. I mean, I've been involved with the sport now 37 years. That's always been the case for bowls. Doesn't make it right.
And there'll be more from GOP shortly.
Right. As we've got the main man on, the main tournament organiser, Mr. GOP, and thought it would be nice to just have a quick review of the Scottish International Open that took place at West Lothian. Got to be credit to the club, the amount of work that they put in, the welcome that he's got, the setup and what have you. I think it was all good, wasn't it? Viewing figures up through the roof.
Yeah. First of all, West Lothian, which is we call now the new home of the Scottish International Open, obviously was Perth for many, many years. Now it's at West Lothian. Yeah, absolutely superb. Bear in mind, you know, when we hold the event, you know, it's always first or second week in November. We ask the club to give me the facilities for almost a week. Well, it is a week with the build and the set D rig. You know, it's a week. And for any bowling club, you know, the members have got to be fully on board to say, well, okay, and look for the bigger picture. You know, the people it brings to the area, the people it brings to the club, the overseas player, they're getting to rub shoulders with some of their bowling heroes, you know. And the beauty thing about West Lothian is when the players come off, you know, 95% of the time, they'll go and have a drink at the bowls bar with the bowls members and have a chat. It was great to see this year the amount of people having photographs with the top 16 players in the overseas and the qualifiers was absolutely fantastic. So I can't thank the club and its members enough for that. The whole competition, I thought, was yet again another step up. I thought the quality of the play was outstanding. Well, yeah, luckily you were far away.
Plus, he didn't have his glasses either, Davey. Jason couldn't see our left side. He had no glasses.
I forgot my glasses. I know, yeah. I can't see the leading scoreboard. Even though I thought the standard was really, really high, I am still amazed, and this is not being nasty to anybody, I am still amazed we only had one qualifier win a first-round game. Yes, I know, I think we had four that went on to the very last end of a tie break, and that just shows you why the top 16 are the top 16. You can say, oh, it's a closed shop, portable rink, it's unfair, it's like playing in their own back garden. And that comment, half of it, I do tend to agree with. Yes, they know the portable rink, they know the characteristics, so they're always slightly ahead. But then you go to a club surface, and bearing in mind West Lothian is an excellent club surface, it really, really is, they still do the business. So they're there for a reason. So people need to just respect that sometimes a little bit. Viewing figures, wow. As you know, we've published them, nearly 500,000 people, and people are still tuning in to catch up and watch. The addition of BBC iPlayer was fantastic this year. Some people probably have chosen to watch on BBC iPlayer other than maybe Facebook or YouTube, and that's perfectly fine. The big thing for me is 101,000, I think it was, on BBC iPlayer. How many of those 101,000 stumbled across our sport using the BBC iPlayer search? Pops up. Oh, what's that? Bowls. Not seen that before. I'll have a look. That's the big thing for me. You know, how many of those were first-time viewers on a massive platform like BBC? We'll never, never, never know. You know, but even if 2% of those people then look for a bowling club, indoors or outdoors, near to them, then to me, that's a win.
Something that we actually needed during the qualifiers, mate, was the padded seat fella turned up.
That was absolutely fantastic. Yeah, we asked him to come along for the final day. He really, really enjoyed it. Bear in mind, he's normally predominantly football. For anybody that follows the padded seat, Facebook and YouTube, he's got TikTok. TikTok's something I've been trying to get involved, as in get a platform for us for bowls for a while. It's just, again, it's the time. The reason we did that was we took a punk and thought, even if he slates us because he doesn't really know about the sport, his Facebook has got 174,000 followers and his TikTok is something like 600,000 followers. It's the reach. You know, it was great to have him on board. It was great to see his feedback. And we posted it. You know, I mean, we didn't get all 5-star. We didn't expect to, because we try and make £200 in bowls look like £2 million. It was that raw feedback from someone who has nothing to do with the sport. And you know me, constructive criticism is what I like, not just someone throwing a flippant bad comment. And we'll take that on board and we'll work with the other members of the WBT board and we'll look to improve. But again, it's that reach. That's nearly 1 million people. Money can't buy that kind of stuff.
And you can understand why a sponsor sort of like sees that and sort of like, oh, I'll get involved with bulls. I still say it's going to be the image, mate, isn't it?
It's got to be the image, because the amount of exposure, if someone goes wants a 30-second television commercial, you're looking, you know, £6,000-£7,000 for a 30-second commercial. You know, for £7,500-£10,000, we can nearly give them headline sponsorship of a 3-day event and hit those figures. You know, whether they're interested in the sport or not, they can't say that for that amount of money, that exposure is not value for money. And it's not just headline sponsors, it's the advertising boards, it's the platforms that we have. You know, people really need to think, actually, I might start putting some money back into this sport, or, you know, I may invest if it's a new person. And I did mention this before about that's another reason people just need to be careful what they say on chats, because we have a few sponsors that have been in touch with us that, and then look at some of the comments and just think, I don't see why I should get involved with a sport where the people that play it just slag it off. This is where we need to be a little bit more savvy.
Sometimes we are our own worst enemies within the sport.
Yeah, Richard Corson said it many years ago, bowls is a fabulous sport. The only issue is the people that play it.
You're most of us not to congratulate Mr. Anderson yet again for another success in Scotland. That's, I don't know how many consecutive wins he's got on that show rink now, but it's quite a few. And also a special call out there for my pal, Mr. Walker, who backed up his World Championship win and nearly bagged BT ranking event, which again just shows anybody out there who manages to qualify for a WBT event, you have a good run. That top 16 is wide open, and I would imagine with that run now, Jamie's got to be probably heading towards that top 5 spot comfortably, I would have thought, with those 2 world wins and a runner-up in a Scottish. So from somebody who's been outside of the top, you know, I might be wrong once it's calculated, but I would have thought he's going to be right up there. And
very quick doodlings, obviously you've got points to come off etc. year by year, but I got him at 4 or 5. I think, you know, I think Les now overtakes Paul again, I think, provisionally. Obviously, it's provisional rankings, as we call it. You know, Jason did very, very well again, so he's going to climb up slightly, isn't there? So, yeah. I mean, this is, I know people say, well, it's only because you've got 2 events. Yeah, of course. Yeah, we're not going to deny that. You know, of course we've only got 2 events, and that's my job as corporate director. You know, I have to go out there and somehow generate sponsorship. You know, for a 3-day event, we never commit. You're looking at £35,000 for a 3-day event, just over 20,000 of which is prize money. The more sponsorship we bring in, the more prize money we can give out, the better we can host things. A lot of people hold bowling events and choose not to give prize money. They'll choose to play for medals or, you know, badges or whatever. That's entirely up to them. But we elect to play for prize money. So anybody that attends a WBT event will get money for losing in the first round, for being there, covers traveling and stuff like that. That's the big difference. You know, we need to get that money in. Anybody listening to this that knows, has a business or knows a business that thinks, what can they do for me? Just contact me. I've got lots of different packages. I've even got an evening with David Bolt, you know, at £3.50. I've got...
does that include a signed picture as well?
Oh, dear me. No, it's not Halloween. Halloween was last show.
I'm going to do like a David Brent one off The Office where I'm lying on a table with my hand on my chin.
Did you see our new merchandise that we tried?
The bottles.
The bottles, yeah. Right. I mean, we got them as just something we're going to try to give out to people, but people wanted to buy them all over the place. It was great. I was signing them and everything.
And your little car as well. Let's not forget your little car.
Yeah, we had a chat. You know, what easy fixes, what quick fixes or quick additions, cheap additions, obviously, because anything costs money, just to make something a bit more fun. So we had the little car, which had the WBT and Lead Succeed logos on. Each game, we decided to try and give somebody the task of driving the car. Now, he's going to hate me for saying this. The worst one out of all 16 was Mark Dawes. I mean, I have no idea what he was doing. I might even ring the DVLA to get his license revoked. Absolutely shocking. He was even outdone by 13-year-old Aston. You know, he was absolutely fantastic. And little, Rory, he was fantastic as well. And the cream of the crop, I thought, was Lucy in the final where Jamie went to get that little jack and she moved it twice. I thought that was absolutely superb.
I was waiting for Jamie to kick it. I said, sod it.
Yeah, I was waiting for someone to kick it. Or my biggest worry is it running out of batteries halfway down the green or something like that. But yeah, it was a gimmick. Yeah. I think the audience liked it. I think it just got people into that decent mood just before you go on. Do you know what I mean? We'll try new things. It's not stars in your eyes, but
well, if it's good enough for other sports, mate, it's good enough for balls.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, cricket do it, don't they, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you don't try anything, you'll never find out. So it's worth always giving things a go. And I thought, like you say, it brought a little bit of atmosphere before the start of the game to give people a laugh. And sometimes it doesn't need to be something spectacular. Sometimes the simplest things can obviously just have a big effect. And as is always the case, there'll be people out there that love it. There'll be people out there that hate it. But ultimately...
£14.99 at B&M Bargains, that one.
Oh, God, sponsor.
There's lots of different things in the pipeline. You know, new set. We're looking at talking about getting a new set for the Worlds. We've got ASIC currently designing, obviously not for this year, it's too late, but we've got ASIC looking at designing complete new look. So we're just trying to, again, look at how we try and move things forward. But it's always hard because moving things forward comes at a cost.
Right.
And it's how you cover that particular cost. The best thing about Scotland is, you know, I'm working with a couple of companies at the moment to try and get a UK Open back up and running. In my head, it's where would you put it? You know, West Lothian and Scotland in general are very, very good supporters of the sport. And it shows you with the figures. I mean, twice now, Gordon, who's in charge of our tickets and hospitality, does what Gordon does and comes in one morning with a little smile on his face. And you know damn well he's oversold again. You know, it's like, where are you putting them, Gordon? I'll find somewhere. But he's constantly actively going out there looking for things. If you went down somewhere else, you know, you never, this is going to sound horrible as an Englishman, you never guaranteed them that you know, those people to turn up. Yes, you want to move things around, but I guarantee a place as busy, and that's the downside of streaming sometimes as well, isn't it? It's so readily accessible that people are thinking, well, I'll just stay at home and have a glass of wine and watch that, which is great. But you still also need people to create that atmosphere by turning up. And the atmosphere on that final day was absolutely amazing.
And if you don't stream the event, people will come on saying, why is it not getting streamed? Such a WBT, why are you not streaming?
And now we return back to our chat with Jason Parkinson.
But I mean, going back to the mental health side of it, I mean, I class myself, didn't laugh, as being a stereotypical fella. I bottle things up. I didn't talk to people. I just take it in and just go quiet. Do you think that's a general DNA of a man, Jess? Or
I'd probably say that's your Yeah, I don't know what the exact word it would be, but I said, but let's say that's a very, very high percentage in males. Very, very high. And you know, it's just like, I mean, it's at what point do you think this isn't actually a weakness? You know, this is a problem, was it shared as a problem halved? It's, and sometimes if there's nobody in immediate vicinity or in your family that is, whether it's an embarrassment thing or whether you think, oh, I don't think that's going to help, then there's plenty of people out there. You know, some people say, I actually preferred speaking to somebody that didn't even know me. And, you know, and there's counselling. You know, we've just, as the company I work for, Transpennine Express, we've just done this big deal with a company called Andy's Man Club, who deal purely with men. Yeah. You know, we've just had our train decorated in their colours, in all their things. It's a big Northwest thing, definitely, you know. They're really, really good. Drop-in centres, WhatsApp messages, face-to-face, telephone calls, whatever suits you. It's whatever you think. When I was struggling, I did a little bit to begin with of counselling. And the thing with counselling is, never be afraid of shopping around. I know it's not shopping, but never be afraid of shopping around. The first counsellor I found wasn't the counsellor for me, because the reason I went was my ex-boyfriend was very, very abusive. And I really, really struggled, because when you say you love somebody and they say they love you, but when they've had a drink, beat the hell out of you, you just don't compute. You think, what on earth's going on? But the first person I spoke to all of a sudden went back to my childhood. How was you treated as a child? And for me, I just, yes, I know they're the professional, but it just didn't work for me. I just thought, yeah, I'm not really bothered what happened 30 years ago. I'm just trying to be, whether that was just me being a bit, maybe want to rush it, need to find that answer, that solution now. But I then swapped to somebody else who used like a light theory. So as he's talking to me, there's all these different lights flashing and you're concentrating on the lights and you're talking. I found that a little bit more beneficial. So just because you find a counsellor or get in touch with a counsellor, if it's not working, please don't think that counselling isn't working for you. You might just not have found the right counsellor or the right type of counselling. That's the big, big, big key. Because I was in the biggest deep hole of my life. But because the other side of me is a little bit bullshitting, a little bit, actually, I am going to do something. I am going to make something myself. I thought, I'll just keep trying. And eventually, and through bowls, I threw myself into bowls when I came back to bowls. That actually helped me, I thought. So there's definitely that. And like I say to people all the time, yes, when you're in a dark place, you're looking at a brick wall. But if you can just spend a couple of hours looking over the top of that wall to what's on the other side, it's a lot brighter picture. It's just making that call or just contact someone like, and I put a post on the other day, contact someone like myself. Straight away, Craig Bowler jumps in. You know, people are there willing to listen.
Yeah.
We might not know you. I don't care. Just make contact with people.
I think the big thing is making the first step, isn't it, mate? That's the hardest thing, I think.
It's like anything. I know, you know, depression, anxiety, illness, you know, it's not an addiction, you know, but it's like an addiction, because until you get the light bulb moment that you do need some form of help, encouragement, support, a contact, nothing will change. You have to tell yourself, I need some help. You've also got to want the help. If you don't want it, you're never going to get anywhere.
No, I totally agree. And like I say, I think it's would be remiss to think that not everybody, you know, not everybody has been there, because I would imagine a heck of a lot of people have. I've had weeks of sitting in a dark room and staring at walls and wondering where the next step's going to be through, you know, partly through my own stupidity, partly through situation and things like that. And I'm sort of the same as Richie in a lot of respects. I class myself as quite headstrong, and I sort of didn't make that open conversation and didn't open up. And I managed to battle through it and found a way out of the situation. But potentially it's after that event where you talk to people and then say, I've just had a really rough time. And they turn around and then they turn around and say, you should have picked the phone up and had a chat. I didn't want to bother you. I didn't want to concern you.
That's the thing. You don't want to impose your problem, your worries, your thoughts on somebody else.
Yeah.
That's the issue, which is why I saw that in you, because I've known you a long, long time. And that's why I just sent you message after message after message after message. Are you okay? Talk to me. Are you okay? Let me know. You know, that kind of stuff. And that's when people spot something, that's there. But it's like you say, never think you're putting your issues onto somebody else.
Yeah.
Because decent people don't think like that, as in the recipient. We don't think like that. I'd rather you do that. And then like Paul did tell me that, and he still took his own life. you know, and I never once, I mean, and he was a massive, you know, he since his mum died of cancer, when my dad died of cancer, he was on that massive roller coaster, and he depended on me and Grant, I don't know, God, 9, 10, took an overdose, we saved him, tried to hang himself, we saved him from a Juliet balcony. And we never once thought of him as a burden. That's the key there. People, decent people, would never think, oh, what's he? Why is he telling me that? You know, why is he putting that pressure onto me? So I'm glad you said that, because for the other person, it's not like that, Davey.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, it's important to say, and I think that's one thing it's important to also do, is not to be frightened to actually say that you've been through a struggle. I think there's a lot of people who, I think the trouble is, they will have a struggle and then potentially have another struggle, and they'll battle the way through the second time. They might battle the way through the third time, but then all of those struggles start to mount, and your whole frame of mind and your whole mental capacity starts to just, you know, there's only so much you can take at times. And this is where some people get to. And it's,
I think I was fine last time. I dealt with that myself last time. Let's say even they do it 2 or 3 times. At some point, that just compounds and compounds and compounds, which then in return sometimes think, oh my God, I can't cope with this, so I'm going to block it out and I'm going to turn to drink, I'm going to turn to drugs, I'm going to self-harm. You know, that kind of stuff then starts to creep in, and that is a massive rocky road. You know, it really, really is. So just because you've done it once or twice, that's compounding them. Because every time something happens, you just think, here we go again. Why is it me? It's, you know, and it's just thinking about, I need to start blocking something out. Drinking drugs will only accelerate dark moods, trust me.
And being there myself through the tough times, and I've probably had a couple of them whilst doing the podcast, and I can switch between where I am and then come on the podcast and have a laugh and a joke. And you look at Robin Williams as an example. You would never ever have thought that he was an unhappy man. And obviously he took his, you know, a high profile celebrity as he was as a comedian, and like I say, he took his own life. And he read the papers the next day, saw the news, and just went, never, he wouldn't have even been in your top 100 of people who you would have thought was in a dark place. And I think it's easy to shroud that by, you know, being, you know, out there and having a laugh, but it doesn't hide the things that you've got to go back into. And I've always been quite open and saying, at the time, I think I'd got to 22 in the world rankings. And, you know, this was back in the days of Kelvin Kirkow playing in the top 16 and your Mark McMahon's and those days. And there was a bit of a chance I could have got closer to it. And I ended up just packing in for 2 years completely. I was walking onto the green. I never expect to beat anybody, but you know in your own mind who you're capable of beating and who you would normally win a game against. I was losing games against people who I would not normally lose those games to. And it wasn't the fact that I was getting beat. It was the manner of how I was getting beat, and myself knowing that one thing from a young kid, if I was behind in a game, I was like a bulldog grabbing all of somebody's those things when they're
your nads.
And I would fight and fight and fight. And, you know, there was numerous games where I'd come back and win the game from oblivion, really, not expected to win the game. And I was starting to lose the games and just couldn't be bothered. There was no fighting us. There was nothing there because purely and simply, I was playing the game, and it constantly in the back of my mind, I was thinking, by the time I come off this green and I finish this game, I've got to face the rubbish that I've got to face back in the house again. And it was literally, it was just a window of opportunity for me to take my mind away from things, but it wasn't even replacing that anymore. It wasn't even taking away the thoughts during a game. So all of my focus was what's going to happen after the game, and my focus on what I was doing in the game had gone completely. So I just walked away for 2 years, lost my position in the WBT rankings where I was. I had to walk away. I had to get away and take time out of the game. And I think I came back and the first season back, I think I won the national singles. And it was just, that was the difference between losing to people I wouldn't have expected to lose and then coming back and then walking away and winning the national singles in the first season coming back, purely because my mind was clear of any issues that I had and I was in a much better place. And I think that's massively important. I've always said this sport is hugely psychological, massively psychological. And, you know, it's you can have all the skill in the world. You need a little bit of luck, but you also need to have a clear mind and know exactly what you're doing. And the best players do that. They just play the shots because they've got nothing else apart from that shot that they're thinking about. It comes in multiple forms. And I think it's just important that people pay a little bit more attention and just look for people who might be just acting out of character, not looking themselves, not being the way they normally are in groups or staying away from the groups. And just don't be frightened asking the question, why? Are you okay? And that was appreciated from you when you sent us that message, because it came out of the blue and I didn't expect it. And it was nice that, you know, it's not nice in some ways because I hate the fact that people are looking and saying that I'm feeling not the way I want to be feeling. But the fact that you asked the question, I had loads going on and I have done for 2 years. But thankfully, because of probably playing this sport for so long and having a really, really strong sort of mental capacity of battling through things, I think that's got us through quite a lot of stuff as well.
Sometimes in life, you do sometimes just need to take that step back, reevaluate to move forward. Otherwise, you're never going to move forward if you just keep trying to push against a wall.
The other thing that I wanted to push was, I don't know, you're probably both saying it, but did you see the Norwich Football Club where it was You Were Not Alone video?
Yeah.
No, you haven't seen it? I tell you what, it's. I mean, I'm 6 foot 6.
Hang on a second. Is that where there's two guys sitting in the seats in every single match?
Yeah,
he gives him a scarf at the end, and he never ever knew that he was.
Yeah,
depressed. Yeah. You, I did see it.
You had one quiet. I mean, this is quite pertinent to what you were saying. What it is, it's a video produced by Norwich Football Club. We'll try to put a link on for it. And it focuses on two supporters in the same seat, and you've got one bubbly character. And you've got one quiet character, and it's sort of like game and everything, and having a little bit odd little chat. And if you're like me, you would focus on the quiet lad and say, he's got the problem. But at the end, at the very end of the video, there's an empty seat, and it's the bubbly lad who obviously is, whether he's committed suicide or what have you, I don't know. It brought a tear to my eyes when I watched it. I got quite emotional when I was watching it.
You just remind us of it, because I remember... I think they score a goal.
Yeah.
And the guy who's jumping about, the other guy's sitting and he's celebrating in his own special way. But the guy who's jumping about gives him the scarf.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, this guy's the one who's really down, and it's the guy who's jumping up and down who's concerned about him, and he gives him his scarf as if to say, you know, there you go, there's a present for you, there's a gift. And then the next match that comes along, the quiet guy comes along with a scarf and actually puts the scarf on the guy's seat in the where he sat for years. So
yeah.
As soon as you said it there, it came to mind, because I did watch it.
It's just a masquerade, isn't it? Again, it's another defense mechanism. I can't show that I'm not okay. I can't show that I'm struggling. That whole comes back to the alpha male, doesn't it? I can't do this. I'm a man. I should man up, whatever on earth that is.
Grow a set, you know, of balls, that's what it is, grow a set.
Yeah, and this is the other thing. I mean, like, when Paul, my mate, you know, he was an odd one, because he did talk about it, which is why I think Grant and I were able to save him a few times or to bounce him up and down a few times. But, I mean, when he was so disciplined because of his jobs. I mean, when he was working, he wouldn't touch a drop. He couldn't even say, have one, you know, have a sniff of one. It was just no. When he was off work, he would just drink, because that was just the way his mind went. He was a yo-yo dieter because of this whole discipline thing. He'd put on 10 stone, but then when he was coming off it, he'd lose the 10 stone. You know what I mean? It was just a joke all the time. And then what really worried me near the end, this is one thing that really does haunt me. Paul was always an angry drunk, as I would call. Miserable drunk, angry drunk. And when he took his own life at the end of the COVID. All of a sudden, when he used to ring me, he was off work because we're struggling to get medical appointments through work, through COVID. All of a sudden, he was becoming a very happy drunk, and it was just out of character. And I kept saying to him, I just don't understand what's going on. He never really got on with his sister, because his sister was very money focused, knew he had a very good job, only ever contacted him when she needed a loan or some money or something like that. All of a sudden, he said, I've made up with my sister all of a sudden. Approaching Christmas, obviously, because it's near the anniversary of his death. So I thought, I said to Grant, okay, that's great. Very out of character. And then the big one was his father. Although I knew his father knew he was gay, he was always a bit worried about that. His father would not accept him because he was from Bolton. And he rang me one night crying his eyes out, 10 past one in the morning. Told me, Dad, Jay, I've told me, Dad, finally he knows. And I said, like, you know, go on then. And I, what did he say? And I knew exactly what the answer was. You miss son, of course, I love you. And then, the next evening, you know, he took his own life at 6 o'clock. Well, I didn't see it. Well, I did see it. It's, you know, I saw it, but when you look back, he was putting things in place. Yeah. He'd already, he'd planned that for at least a week. He was putting all these things in place because that's the kind of guy he was, putting all the wrongs right. And, you know, he rang me one night. I was driving a train in Liverpool. And he said, I can't cope anymore, Jay. I'm so sorry. I'm going to smash my car against this wall in Rivington Pike. And I said, don't be so stupid. Had the normal conversations that I had with him. You know, I'd clearly been drinking. I said, look, just have a sleep or something. Go home. I said, I'm really, really sorry. I need to drive this train now, which is the biggest regret I ever had. Get yourself home. When I get to Leeds, I'm going to ring you. And I honestly thought, once again, he made job done. Gets to Leeds an hour and a half later. Phone call from the police. Oh, hi, it's the police here. Can you call me? And I just knew. I just bloody knew he'd done it, you know, straight away. And, yeah. And all I can just say to people, if people relating to anything, no matter how big or how small, just talk to somebody. Even if it's just us, you know, all three of us would be more than willing to happy to help any bowler, won't we? Anyone. Or at least put you in touch with professional help. I've got loads of contacts with her. Please just pick the phone up or message us.
I think the other thing as well, Jess, I mean, this might sound terrible, but people who do commit suicide, obviously it's horrific, but the wreckage that they leave behind, I mean, just looking at you now, we can still see how it's still affected you 2 years on. And it's the people who get caught up in it when the person's not here, whether they know they're doing it or not, but it's just the wreckage that's left behind. It's just it'll never go away, unfortunately.
No, it'll never go away, won't it? It's just strange. I can't remember. I mean, I've been doing my job 17 years, of which the last 11 being on call for things like fatalities. I think I've attended so many fatalities on the road. I'm talking, well, say so many. You're looking at 30, 40 fatalities. Only ever one lady, always men, you know, or even boys. I mean, I've been to a fatality with two 14-year-old boys. And it's just strange. It's how we need to somehow get the message through, not to anyone, but mainly to men, that, you know, we are here. You know, you're not a failure. Like you say, it's the wreckage people leave behind. Because everybody starts, not blaming, well, I suppose they are blaming themselves. It's always with any trauma, yeah. What if, isn't it? What if? Yeah. And that is a question you will never, ever, ever answer. And that's rich coming from me because I ask myself that all the time with Paul. But it's always that what if. But if you spin it, what if I'd have spoken to somebody? You know, what if I'd have reached out? Yeah, I think when you say, David, we do see quite a lot of it. I think some people, and this is where it gets a little bit tricky, cry out for attention, and it's purely attention. But some people are crying out for something other than that. And this is why people just need to be very, very careful, like just wanting attention can sometimes mask somebody who really needs the help.
Yeah.
Or maybe you may want the attention, but then slip into something. And the boy who cried wolf, for example, but might think, oh, he's after the attention again. But really, it's gone further than that now. Yeah. It's gone to that next level where they actually want help.
Yeah, definitely. I was just going to say, it's that age-old saying, hindsight's a wonderful thing, mate. And it's just, it's trying to make sure that you never think with hindsight, should I have just picked the phone up? It's a case of, unfortunately, not unfortunately, but it's just sometimes a case of pick the phone up. And if it doesn't work and if it's not needed, then you're probably never going to see a hindsight's a wonderful thing because you've done what you felt that was needed to actually help somebody. It's that whole thing of living with, like you've talked about, the whole thing of living with not having picked the phone up. And that what if scenario, like exactly what you've just said. I think it's been a really, really good chat. And like I say, I think certainly very relatable within our sport and just relatable in life itself. You know, we have got hundreds of thousands of friends that, you know, that we've met and, you know, Facebook, whether you speak to them on a regular basis or whether they're just somebody who follows you or just likes your profile on Facebook, whoever that might be. there'll still be a point where it's somewhere along the line, something will pop up on a timeline, which might just open your eyes and might just say, look, we've never talked to before, but I'm just a bit concerned about what you've put. Thanks for that, Jess. And I know it's a really, really tough one for you. And I genuinely don't know how you sort of do it with the role that you're in. And I know it's a massive part of it. And really good talk. And I hope a lot of people who are listening have found it, you know, very interesting and maybe just made them think, I know somebody like that, or I've seen something like that, and maybe just pick the phone up or just catch them the next time they're in the club and just simple words, is everything okay? And I think that's all you need to ask.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's on the character, isn't it? I mean, you know, I think the job that we all do with the podcast and also streaming, don't we? I mean, the whole idea of it is to have that nice, gentle banter, have a giggle, you know, make a lot of flipping things. But, you know, like you say, David, we've been there doing all that, having a ball, having a blast, having a giggle, making people chuckle. But, like, you know, like for you more so recently, has still been dealing with other things. And people think, oh my God, you know, I couldn't believe that. No, because that again is that masquerade. Yeah. It's not a job, but it's, you know, that's what you want to. What you come across and try and do. I mean, the biggest thing for me was, I remember at Leamington very quickly did some commentary with Craig Bowler, and someone popped something in the chat like they do, you know, a bit of chat saying that Craig was inspirational. So there was a bit of a middle point in one of the games where wasn't really a lot happening. So I thought, well, whilst I've got Craig here, a quick chat about what was going on. And within the first 3 or 4 minutes, someone said, oh, I wish these two would stop talking about mental health and just get on with the bowls. And I just thought, and that is why people are in such a mess. just think twice.
this is a ladies' game.
you better reach your calls it. You'd have heard one of my JP huffs. Signature huff.
This is exactly why Richie puts a dog collar and a lead on me, because when I see some of the comments that come from honestly, up in West Lothian, honestly, I just chuckled 2 or 3 times. We say it over and over and over again. The podcast is there purely and simply to hopefully give a few laughs along the way. Most importantly, the work Richie does, you know, the travel he's done, just to provide live balls. And it's lovely to see the comments from people saying it's been great to watch live balls every weekend for the last whatever it is. And I don't know how many times we've got to say it. It's like, if you didn't like what we're saying, turn the volume down. You can still watch the balls and didn't listen to the crap we talk. But you know what it is? We love the crap we talk. And thankfully, a lot of the people who also listen to the crap we talk enjoy the crap we talk.
Exactly.
It's as simple as that. It is as simple as that. All we're trying to do is just put a little bit of a twist and a little bit of enjoyment on watching balls. Because do you know what it is? I cannot stand watching balls. I have never been able to stand watching balls. But you know what it is? I love doing the streaming because I ain't watching balls. I'm talking prop, and I love it.
Hey, Richie, what's the format?
Three sets. I'm still getting it wrong. Right, there you go, mate. Show number 52, done and dusted. And our old little buddy, JP Parkinson, being on. It's a different kind of podcast, to say the least. An emotive subject.
Hopefully anybody who does listen, you just never know how many people are out there who watch the podcast, listen to the podcast, whatever it might be. Or might be just going through a bad time. I might know somebody who's going through a bad time, and it might just open that conversation. And you know what it is? I would love if this just did spark somebody to have a chat with somebody who's in a really dark place, and it helped. Brilliant.
I always think about the streaming, because there's a lot of people who probably watch our streaming who probably live at home by themselves. Yeah, we do talk utter rubbish at times, but hopefully that if they're living by themselves, having a little bit of a brings a little bit of a smile to them, and hopefully, yeah, like you say, man. There's one thing I just want to kick down the road and just ask you your opinion on this one. EIBA competitions, Denny Cup, Liberty Trophy. Is it time to widen the net? I think there's a lot of comments that I've seen where clubs are sick of playing in the same clubs in each and every round. I mean, just widen the net just a little bit in the area. The other one, this one will be controversial, because I would have said get rid of the Denny plate, because I think there are a few clubs out there who see who they're getting drawn drawn against and would prefer to have a crack in the plate, which I don't think that's what the plate's there for.
Touch on the Denny plate one to starters, and I've said this for years and years since it was incorporated. Totally agree. My opinion of the Denny plate is it's good in its concept because it keeps team games alive for those who might not be strong enough to compete with a stronger team. So I see it as a positive competition. I know some people look at it as a loser's competition, but I'm going to touch on that in a second. We benefited hugely from it. When South Shields sort of came together as the new crop of players that we have now, and I still to this day say we went into a game and thought we just had to turn up and win the game. We didn't. We got beat first round. Complete eye-opener. And I basically, as team manager at the time, I went, we're going to treat this competition like it's the Denny Cup, and we're going to basically make sure that by the time next season comes around, we utilise it and we basically firm up our ranks. And I think it's great for that. And you look at Cumbria last year, they've done the same thing. Cumbria went into the plate last year, found players who, you know, maybe wouldn't have ordinarily got games and basically built the squad and won the Denny plate and then give us a good hiding yesterday in the Denny Cup. Great to see Cumbria back because for me, they are the Denny Kings and have been for a long time. What I disagree with is that it's first round losers because, as we've said, clubs will specifically go out to lose that first round to then play in the Denny plate, which makes it a farce for those clubs that are taking time out on a weekend to go and play a no game. Every single club should have to win a game to play in the Denny plate. So it should be second round losers, not first round losers. So you've got to go out and actually win a game first, and then the second round losers then go into a plate competition. That for me then takes away the opportunity of any club trying to lose for the sake of losing. They might still do it. They might still win an easier game in the first round and then say we're going to chuck the second round because we know we're not good enough. But they've still had to go out there and win that game. And I've said this for a long time. It should be second round losers. As far as widening the net's concerned, I'm sick to death of playing Cumbria every single year in the trophy. Yeah. Home away. Every year, and you probably know better than me, it must be nine years off the bounce, something like that.
Yeah.
Cumbria. And what irritates us is Durham and Cumbria have both got the capability of competing against each other in a Liberty final. It will never, ever happen because we're battering each other in the first round. One seems to win at home one year, the other one seems to win at home the next year, and on and on and on. The Liberty Trophy is only about four rounds to get to the final. Just open it up to the country. Nobody will care. You know, we played Devon in the Denny Cup. South Shields to Devon's probably, you know, two of the furthest points you're ever going to play. We met at rugby halfway down the country, 2.5 hours drive, played against each other and went home. Nobody had an issue because it's an event for the club. There was people came down and supported. It was nice because it created a bit of an atmosphere. There was a bit of crack on the bus or, you know, even if it's just cars, it's just nice to get away with the lads and do it. And these competitions up to a wider scale. I'm sick of playing the same local teams every single year in the same competitions. And this whole north and south, the north of the Liberty will play the south of the Liberty in the final. Why? Are you saying that two northern teams or two southern teams aren't capable of playing each other in the final? There might be a team out there that's, you know, far better than any other team in the north, but they're never going to get the opportunity to get the final because they're battering the crap out of each other. Just open it up. It's the same with the Middleton. Open it up. Make it a knockout, and instead of having this three games in a Middleton where you get beaten in two of them and your third game, you're having to call on your B team players all the time because all your Middleton players all of a sudden disappear and they've all got the bollocks to wash and go and get their hair cut and all of this. And it's like, you're just not playing because at the end of the day, you want a weekend off and you know we haven't got a chance. Take that out of the equation. Make it a straight knockout. Understand that people have got lives and people have got sacrifices with families to play these games. Just get the competition done and playing against different teams from across the country.
Yeah.
That is what our sport is all about meeting new people and playing against different teams. And it's just become stale and monotonous. And I love the Denny. Love the Denny Cup, but I'm sick to death of playing the same teams.
Well, lit the torch there, didn't I?
Boils my potatoes.
Potatoes. Is that one of mine? That's one of mine, isn't it?
Boils my potatoes, it does. But no, it's been a bugbear of mine for a long time. But I would guarantee that any competitive bowler out there who plays in Denny's, plays in Middleton's, would never have an issue about just sparing one weekend to go 2.5 hours down the country and play a match. Because ultimately, if they win, it's great because they get further in the competition. If they lose, great, they're out because they can plan things with their family and do things for the rest of the summer.
Well, AIBA, Carl, if you're listening, son, Carl, we've already a suggestion out there. No criticism, we've already a suggestion. Well, there you go, mate. Show 52. Thanks, everybody. Hope you enjoy it. And watch out for our Boxing Day special. come out on Boxing Day. What day is Boxing Day, Davey?
That's on the 26th of December, last time I looked.
Because I think I said the 27th of 1 year.
Do you know why they call it Boxing Day, Rich?
Why do they call it Boxing Day?
Because if I didn't get the presents I want, I'm going to punch the crap out of somebody. That's why.
I'm off to the shops. I'm off to IKEA. Ann Summers. I'm off to Ann Summers. Even better. Right, hope you enjoy the show, folks, and we'll catch you later.
Catch you later. Take care.
Everyone, just remember, it's good to talk.
Thank you for listening and hope you've enjoyed the show.
This has been a Dodgy Production.